This week on Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we finished season one with Avi Vanoker of Goodnight Texas and kinda Metallica. I'm gonna say Metallica. You'll find out why. How are you guys doing today?
I am doing well. How about yourself, Dennis?
I'm doing all right.
Congrats, boys. We did it.
We arbitrarily
decided that a season is 20 episodes. And then we made 20 episodes.
That is the standard podcast season, I believe.
Yeah.
Is it?
No, but
it is now, it is damn
this
it.
This one.
No, I think we made 19 episodes and we're like, actually, 20? That sounds like a season. So we made 19 episodes and then said that this is our season finale. But it was a great season finale, guys. Congratulations. How are y'all drinking to celebrate this season finale?
I am drinking a Kolsch Money from our brewery, Springdale, which is delicious. Even though I think it's from like February. Not to say that that's a negative, but yeah, it's an older beer and it still tastes really good.
I think you forgot to say award-winning.
Award-winning. Money.
There you go.
Bronze medal. GABF 2020.
There you go.
Sponsorship. Are we going to be like Great Lakes and we're going to blow it up on a giant medal on their new can? For the medal they won in 1990.
Damn.
One of three entries in the Dortmunder category. Just kidding. We have to be great.
No, that beer is awesome, but still, I love that they're really clinging to that.
Amen. If it works, it works. Ours is a little bit more recent.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
I'm drinking a Flensburger Dunkel.
Oh.
It is really good. It's like really like malty, caramelly, toffee, a little bit of like a hint of chocolate. It's really, really good.
I love dark lager. Lager. I said dark lager. That's seaweed. Dark lager is the thing that I love.
Dark lager, on the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a huge, huge dark lager fan.
Me too, man. I'm not drinking anything. We recorded this episode with Avi, who plays in, as I mentioned, Goodnight Texas, and is kind of a folk rock Americana kind of vibe. And then I immediately went to Nashville for 2 days and drank a lot of lagers and among other delights. And my alcohol quotient for the time being is very full. So I'm recovering from the country music soaked confines of many a honky tonk. I have to say, strange city. I feel like Avi's music kind of fits in that city. I really love Avi's music. I thought Nashville was fine.
Just fine. What were your complaints on Nashville?
Just fine. Well, it wasn't
another city for the podcast. Let's go.
No, I forget where else we've written ourselves out of, but Nashville is like not a walking city, which I mean, I can't hold it against it because it doesn't claim to be. I'm an arrogant Bostonian and was like, that's 2 miles away. Let's walk there. And then it was like 2 miles of open highway and no shade and no other people walking anywhere we ever saw.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, the honky tonk vibe was cool when it wasn't like later at night. And then later at night, it's a very, they have bachelorette parties being tugged by tractors down the middle of the street. And then there's like roving packs of bachelor parties who walk around with their chest puffed out, hollering at and vice versa. And it's very, very amusing to watch for a few minutes. And then when you realize this is where you are for longer than a few minutes, you're like, oh, I got you. So an interesting growth of Americana in that area. Not the stories that Avi, Patrick, and them are telling in Goodnight Texas necessarily, but maybe with some shared instrumentation in medium. There's definitely some really fun honky tonks. Roberts was awesome. Roberts Western World, very excellent. I saw two different guitar players pull the, I'm gonna put the guitar behind my back and do this solo thing. And then the one guy who was soloing on the pedal steel and then jumping back and forth between the Telecaster he was holding with the slide. So very cool.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Mm.
Also,
it seemed.
I don't understand how a city founded in the 1700s isn't fucking walkable. Like, what corruption happened there where car companies are like, we're going to space this out. You guys have been too close for too long.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say the city's been through like, it's had like a crazy year. Some bartenders are telling us about people who are opening bars. They're like, yeah, this person's gonna open this bar. And then you know, the pandemic happened, and then this flood happened, and then this tornado happened, and then somebody blew up the block next to them. And I'm like, yep, that's a year for you. That's so, I do feel like maybe, giving it a couple years to get back on his feet, maybe would, help it. But I don't know. There are lots of delights to it. And I wish I had done more research prior to. But the crew enjoyed it, and we listened to some Goodnight Texas and talked about Avi. So there's a light link to what we're talking about. I think I was like talking to Avi about going on this trip with one of our mutual friends on the pod. So yeah, we did not talk a lot about Metallica, but we did talk to Avi a hell of a lot about Metallica, Dennis. You missed quite the Metallica episode. So I don't know if they're one of your big four or not.
They are absolutely not.
But understood.
I mean, you know, growing up as a metal kid, you know, Metallica is like the entry point to a lot more metal bands. So like, you know, their first three albums are like freaking gospel. And then Cliff died, and then it kind of starts going downhill real quick. But yeah, but you know, and also being a bass player, Cliff, huge impact influence on me as a bass player. Just like everything he did was just gold and so just intimidating to try to learn when you're like 14, 15.
Yeah, that is some fast, aggressive music.
Sure is.
Funny to hear. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to listen to some of the things that they reinterpreted for, like, you know, to accommodate mandolin. They didn't just do some of the more like symphonic later and more pop rock oriented Metallica songs. They do some early ones and try to like tug out some space in these songs that like really didn't have space. And so I think it's interesting to hear those songs in particular, and they're like, oh, these are still good songs. It's not just about how fast or aggressive they were. That is obviously a component of it. And as a punk kid, those earlier ones are the ones that I like.
Yeah,
I think I gravitate most towards, though. As part of prep for this, I got to listen to the Black album again, which might have been, I think, the first time I listened to it all the way through. And that was really fun. Because there are like a lot of good songs. They are still good songwriters. I say still. That was in 1991.
Yeah.
I don't know. The
I wouldn't endorse the still part, but yeah, that Black album wasn't terrible.
That's a ringing endorsement.
That was that was like twisting it out of him right there.
Yeah. I mean,
you would not, if that song came on at the right volume at the right time, any of the songs in that album, you would.
How drunk am I? That's kind of, you know.
Well,
yeah, that's
a question you have to answer, sure. But I will tell you, some of those songs.
Some of those songs have good hooks in them. Yeah,
yeah. All of them except for Unforgiven, which sounds like it was written for like the movie Tombstone. Like they were like, we need to get a movie on that.
Yeah.
Or a song on that movie.
Yeah.
Dennis, make that sound right. Make that joke work.
I thought you were going on the Tombstone pizza direction myself.
I mean, they could have been trying to double dip.
Hey. What do you want on your tombstone?
Pineapple? That's unforgivable. Boom, bow, bow, bow.
Now, that is yet another tie-in to our episode where we talk about commercial tie-ins for music. So you think the Metallica by 1991 was already like, all right, listen. I'm gonna write this sick song so we can get in the movie and get a pizza endorsement. Boom. Why not? I guess. That's
apparently exactly what Avi was thinking when he wrote a certain song for a certain product, right? That's what he admits to. Just straight up selling out.
You'll have to listen ahead to find out. But definitely not. It's different at their level because they're still, I mean, you know, they're still climbing the ladder. Recognition in the world for it. In 1991, Metallica, they were just like, I'm just gonna put an album out with a snake on it. Like, you're gonna know it's us.
Yeah. It's also a totally different world. Metallica was, you know, selling a shit ton of records back then, and still, and now you could barely sell a record because the internet ruined it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but the internet did bring you this medium and thus this podcast. So thanks, internet, for ruining that.
As well. I mean, it ruined record sales. The internet's done a lot of good. I'm not saying it hasn't, but, you know, it's also done a lot of bad. So, you know, I'm neutral. You
should buy records on Friday.
You should go buy records.
I mean, I think you can, but you could buy a Metallica record and support the causes that were mentioned, but you can buy a record from a small band too. I mean, I think that's,
or buy a Goodnight Texas record. That's what I think we were trying to get at.
Not a Metallica.
Go to Napster, download Metallica, buy just a Goodnight.
Just instead, for the spite, download Metallica.
You have to download Napster first, figure out if that still works. And then send Lars a picture of your download.
Yeah.
You know, I think this season has been a very fun mix of interesting people connected to music and beer in a variety of ways. And I'm really glad that we got a chance to do this. And I'm excited because we have been talking about what we're going to do in season two, including in-person actual interviews with people again. So thank you guys for being here in these tiny boxes in our hot, sweaty, non-air-conditioned rooms to make this happen.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Dennis, thank you for producing this bad boy.
Oh, thank you, guys.
You have to listen to us even more than we have to talk to each other.
I know, right?
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's the hardest part of my job.
Yes. Well, sorry about that. I am sincere in saying it has been a pleasure, and I'm excited for doing more of these. And I think more people should listen to Goodnight Texas. So, you guys do it too. You guys probably did because we prepared for it. But other people who are within the sound of our voices, you should listen to Goodnight Texas.
Should listen to Goodnight Texas. Listen to this entire podcast. Give us that 5-star review. And also listen to all of the other bands that we've talked to here.
Buy all of the things.
There's now 20 bands you need to listen to, guys. All right.
Yeah.
Do it. Just do it.
I think we are at 18 musical artists.
And yeah, it's true. Yeah.
You can buy a piece of art from the two people who are not musical artists.
Go support the Dregs Records and also Anna Keeney.
And Sammer. Don't forget and Sammer. So also Sammer. We're down to 17. All right. We're basically 17 bands. Cutting down.
Well, no, there's a couple of artists that have multiple bands.
Sure.
So you can still support 20.
We're back up.
Park might be in 20 bands. So
I think that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Between Mike and Jeff Rosenstock. Come on. Those two guys. Well, yeah. And buy all those things and support music you love. And we're going to be at shows this summer doing this thing. And we hope to see you all at shows too. Make it happen.
Can't wait. See you guys.
Wait up.
Bye. Well, hey, Avi, welcome to our little podcast.
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit?
I am Avi Vinoker. I play mandolin and guitar in a band called Goodnight Texas. I live in the Bay Area in California. My bandmate and songwriter Pat lives on the East Coast. Bandmate and co-songwriter. He lives in New Jersey. He used to live in North Carolina, and we named the band after a town directly between us in North Carolina and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and San Francisco, a town called Goodnight, Texas. So we're named after that. And that's it.
Yeah, I want to like get into that origin story a bit at some point, because I was looking through your discography, and I think you might have just released some of the Coattail stuff that was P-Wolf and Avi.
Yeah.
Pre-Goodnight, Texas.
Yeah, we re-released that digitally and put out a live show from back then, from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so how did you guys first link up? What was the connection?
We met at a cafe in San Francisco that was called the Bizarre Cafe. It's still there under new ownership, but the previous owner was a cousin of mine, unbeknownst to me at the time, when I met Patrick, and then found out that the guy who owned the cafe where Pat and I met was in fact a long lost cousin of my mom's. And mine.
Secret, yeah. Cousins.
Yes.
That's usually a sign.
I knew him for like I knew him for like 5 years or maybe a little more before we figured that out.
Wow.
And it was like, oh man. And like, really, I mean, like my mom and he grew up, you know, he was a little older than my mom, but they like, you know, grew up around each other. And then he moved to the West Coast when he turned 18, and really people didn't really hardly hear from him at all. And no one saw him until we realized I was friends with him. And it was like, that's Lester. That's the guy.
Like, was this like a meet cute at a cafe, or were you both performing at this cafe?
It was kind of a meet cute. I was performing. I was filling in for a friend who like had to cancel at the last minute. And Patrick had just moved to the area with his girlfriend, now wife. And they lived in the area and just kind of heard there was live music at this cafe, and they just kind of went there and were just in the audience. That was it.
And there it is.
And he came up to me after and was like, "Hey, I play. Like, do you want to do a show together?" And I was like, "Yeah,
whoa, okay." So forward. That is so like, forward.
I was like, "Yeah, all right, yeah."
I don't even want to rehearse. We're just gonna play.
Yeah, but then I hosted this open mic and I invited him to come by and play something. And he did. And I just was like shocked that he wrote the songs that he was playing. I was like, those are your songs. Seriously. And he was like, yeah, yeah. I was like, wow, you're incredible. So we sort of decided we wanted to play music together, but didn't really know how to go about doing that. We didn't like come supernaturally at first, like how to fit into each other's music. I didn't know what to add to his music. I didn't really like hear anything missing. And I didn't know what to have him do, but we started using like electric guitar and two acoustics. I played mandolin and kind of got that involved, but yeah, but the whole thing sort of started at this cafe that we ended up, you know, playing a lot at through the years. And yeah, very, very bizarre experience at the Bazaar Cafe.
And at some point he moves back east, and you really, it seems like that's when the band kicks up, right? Because you said that, yeah, it's named after this distance between you.
Correct. Yeah. He moved to North Carolina. Mary, his wife now, was going to do medical school at UNC. So they went to North Carolina, which is where she grew up also. So they moved back kind of near her folks. And yeah. And that's when we really decided to try to start the band and do a cross country thing and have it be complicated and just see what happened. And it's still working somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you guys may have been better suited for the last year than many others, considering the cross country collaboration.
It did feel not totally different, other than, you know, normally we get to hang out a little more often in person and, you know, mess around with songs we're working on. And it's been, you know, restricted to distance. Yeah, I haven't seen him in person since March 13th. When we dropped him, we canceled the whole tour, and I dropped him at the airport in St. Louis, and we drove home. Yeah. Man.
I like don't even understand how that works. Is it just like, does he have like a finished song, sends it to you and you fill it in? Or do you guys like add, like, do you have a full song and like finish it? Or do you have like parts that you
figure out? There are some songs that are more collaborative than others. I think for the most part, he and I write separately and then sort of present songs to each other and kind of have a vision for how we want it to go. But then we'll each sort of kind of produce each other's songs sometimes or add a couple things or sometimes just do what each other wants exactly verbatim. Kind of depends on the song and, you know, how strongly someone feels about it. But then there's some like The Railroad, which has been one of our more successful songs. That was completely collaborative. We just like figured that out as we went along. I like had this riff and he added this part and then we didn't have words for it yet. And we played it like instrumentally for a friend of ours, who actually is also from Boston, one of Pat's friends from Boston, named Matt Gregory. And we played it for he and his now wife in their living room. And he was like, I love this. This is great. It doesn't need any words. And it was like, oh yeah, I kind of agree. And so we kept words at the end, but we just had the beginning be instrumental. And it was like, yeah, this feels like cool, dark kind of thing. But that was really collaborative. We worked on that from the ground up kind of, and designed how it should go. And he added lyrics, I added lyrics. Yeah.
It might be just like my imagination, but I feel like from, A Long Life of Living to now, it feels like the collaboration has like deepened and there's like you're more intermeshed. Like I feel like on the first album. It's like it's a Patrick song and an Avi song.
Absolutely. And a lot of them were songs that we had played solo or worked on solo, and then it was sort of like, yeah, I mean, we had been P. Wolf and Avi where it was very much his song, my song. And then this was, you know, more collaborative, but still was pretty separate. And then nowadays, I mean, our newest stuff, we have a new album that is completed and is going to come out later this year. We're hoping, depends on how the scheduling works out, but yeah, so it's been much more collaborative. We've been getting, you know, the other members involved too. And, you know, we locked up in a, Airbnb in Cambria, California, and laid down a bunch of drum tracks and worked on each other's stuff out there. And yeah, it's been getting more and more collaborative as we've gone along, but there's definitely still songs that we write separately. And it's like, it's just, you know, designed to be very quiet and simple. And there's some of that too.
I was explaining you and your band to somebody recently, and we've spent a lot of time. This is actually the end of our first season of this podcast. I was trying to wrap up with the kind of musicians we talk to and realizing that we're usually pretty poor at like ascribing genre to people or being like, this is that kind of thing.
Or sometimes even knowing what a genre of music is.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
But one of the things I find myself doing in describing what you do and like who you guys are is like this band that has like these stomping songs that they can like control room, but then also either of the two songwriters can stomp, pick up an instrument, and just the room will just be dead silent as they play a song.
Oh yeah.
And like, you know, I remember a specific time, I think at TT the Bears, where like I saw you just like this, like you could not, it would have been rude to whisper while you were doing this, and I was like, I have not seen anybody go from the stomper to that and like have the crowd with them the entire time. So I was like, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like that.
Thank
you. You should listen to it.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's definitely our objective, is to be able to sort of tell stories and have people, you know, want to get quiet and listen carefully, but then also get rowdy, you know, at times, and trying to make that all work within one show. So that's, yeah, thank you. That's definitely our objective and mission statement.
As I've seen you guys over the years though, I have noticed more of your like, I think I remember talking to you about this at one point, but more like dark kind of like heavy music influence just kind of seeping through the cracks. And like, I think it's maybe like, maybe you would play Car Parts and Linens, which I think is one of maybe it's one of Patrick's tracks on your first album, where when I saw you play it this particular time, you had like a kind of a droney distorted background thing. And I was like, you guys are getting like dirty in this song now. And now like,
yeah.
I'm on my way home today, I was listening to Tucum Carey and thinking about this. This is like a almost like a metal riff in the middle of this.
Like
this stomping heavy riff. And I'm like, these guys are like sneaking in some of your influences.
Yeah, we're in definitely like cool ways. Definitely trying to. We always like that. I spent time trying to like figure out how to articulate describing that concept, because we love like, you know, American history and you know, all of its problems, and trying to come to the truth, but tell stories too of fiction and nonfiction, and sort of think that like we're trying to capture sort of the heaviness of, you know, America's past, present, and potentially future. And there's a lot of like brooding darkness in that a whole lot. So, I mean, you know, that's something that we've tried to musically capture, and we both really enjoy heavy music. And, you know, I've been working for the band Metallica for like 13 years, and I can't help but rub off on you after a while.
Yeah, we should talk a little bit about that. I see that you guys are included in a 7 LP compilation coming out in September.
Yes, on one album. I know you didn't make this album, but I just want to quickly there's so much good Metallica. They're like, we're sticking to just the Black album for 7 records worth.
Yes.
I know you didn't make the track listing of this. I'm just complaining to the ether that was unnecessary. They were
complaining about it.
Hey, I think they were like, wow, a lot of people are interested in doing this. Why don't we just let everybody do everything and we'll just put it all together? And sure. I think if anything, they were like stoked that anyone wanted to do it at all, you know? Like, they're like, people want to play these songs. And yeah, sure enough, a whole lot of people want to play a whole lot of songs and a whole lot of similar, but there's so many unique versions on this record. I've been privy to hear a couple of them, not everything, but some of them that are like awesome. Cool. And they're very, very stoked about the whole thing and hearing other people's takes on it. And so, yeah, we gave the song Of Wolf and Man a very Goodnight Texas sort of dark historical treatment, and kind of made it sort of mystical and foresty or something. a lot of mandolin, a lot of, you know, there's like fiddle and pedal steel, and but it's dark and it's fucking kind of heavy and sort of slow. I mean, the original is a really brash, intense song. And I guess we were the only band to do that song too on the whole record, which is crazy. No one else went for that one. It's really, I think there were only 2 songs that were only done once.
Oh, that's cool.
Which after looking at the track list, it was like, whoa, no one else did it.
This is the first time in the course of an interview I've researching it. I was like, not listening to the band, but I was like, well, now I can listen to the Black album, because I can't listen to all these tracks yet. So I don't think I'd ever listen to the Black album front to back, because I grew up as a punk and hardcore kid, I have to admit. So
yeah,
I knew all the singles on that album, but I didn't know the whole thing.
I did not know the intricacies of the Black album aside from the big singles until, you know, later. You knew the big hits and they were on the radio, but yeah, I grew up in Manhattan Beach, which was definitely the South Bay in Southern California is definitely a skate punk, you know, punk mecca, and the Descendants and all that. And like, I wasn't super clued in on metal stuff. And when I started working for them too, like, it wasn't like I was a big metalhead or anything. And I think maybe that was good that I wasn't like a super fan or something. I don't know. I was just like a dude. But yeah, in diving deeper into it, some of the B-sides on that record are really insane and really awesome. Yeah,
and A Wolf and Man is a good one. I do think like not being a huge fan does help you like reinterpret it without like having it ingrained in your brain. Like, I'm sure there's people that have heard, you know, Enter Sandman a million times and they're like,
yeah,
play it differently. Like,
yeah, that one especially. That one especially is like, there's it's hard to, everything's so rhythmic and like together and riffs and the stuff. Like it's, I don't know how to reinterpret. There are some really crazy different versions of that on here. I think it's going to be awesome, but yeah, there's some songs. It's like, I can't imagine how to redo this in a different way, but yeah, Wolf of Man, for some reason, just like the story of it all just felt right to me. And I've become a fan, you know, as I've worked for them and watched them do what they do. And
you've also played with them a few times.
I've been very fortunate to join them a few times and play mandolin. And
so how did you end up playing mandolin for Metallica? Let's get to the bottom of this real quick.
You know, totally, just totally crazy luck. I I have no idea. I'm around them, so they know I'm there, and they know I play music. I hang outside
of Lars's house, and you know.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I know them, and they know I play music. And James always liked the mandolin and was interested in like bluegrass and how, you know, the history of that stuff. And he has a really cool mandolin in his collection. And like I know that was interesting to him. And he did this solo show one year at the Fillmore for like a charity night with Sammy Hagar. They hosted this charity night for a few years. And he did the first one completely by himself. And he saw that the other bands, some of the other people playing, had a couple people accompanying them. So the following year, he got like a pedal steel player, and his daughter sang a song with him. And then the year after that, I think James was considering adding even more people. And my boss was like, yeah, Avi plays mandolin. And James was like, I know, you know, you should do some stuff with us. I was like, whoa. And then he was like, hey, what, any songs you want to do or reimagine or something? Like, if you let me know. I was like, whoa, okay, this is heavy. I gotta think about this for a minute. So I kind of like on my phone made a little demo of like a mandolin version of Motor Breath. And he was like, cool, yeah. And so we did the show, and I don't know if like there were any expectations, you know. I didn't think I would like fit in super well with his voice necessarily. That doesn't always mesh, but like it went really well. And we both were stoked on it. And I think when they got together to do their 2018 acoustic show, and they wanted to add more musicians, they were like, you should come do backing vocals on the set. And they got like my buddy Cody playing percussion, and this guy David on pedal steel was awesome, and Henry on keys, and like filled out the sound. And so yeah, then we did that show and it went well, and then did another one with them. And so because that show in 2018, they at that show, the show was for their charity, which is All Within My Hands. And so we did the song All Within My Hands from Saint Anger, which is an insane song. And they have this beautiful acoustic version of it that they had been playing around with and done like once before. And so I sang back vocals on it and played mandolin. And then when it came time to do their symphony show, I think it doing a pretty symphonic version of that song made sense. And then they asked me to sing with them. So that's how I got involved in that. Just kind of one thing after another. It's like, hey, and I'm also like around. So like, maybe they sort of like, oh yeah, him.
Okay.
But yeah, it's been a whirlwind and so fun, and I feel pretty damn lucky to get asked to do it more than once. So that's how that all came about.
I mean, you know, I did get a real kick out of Howard Stern calling you out in their interview. That was quite a moment.
I guess when he asks a band to be on the show, he kind of tells them what songs he wants them to play. They don't have to play it, but I guess the most bands are like accommodate Howard on his show, and they're like, yeah, if you want to hear that, if you want to hear Master Puppets, we'll play Master Puppets, you know, or if you want to hear, you know, these songs, we'll do that. Or, you know, or if he's like, play what you want, I'm sure that's cool, you know, too. But he asked for All Within My Hands, or his team asked for it, and as promo for the S&M box set, which they didn't get to do like a big promo tour because of quarantine, you know, the world's closing and all that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like, it just was like, we're doing that song. Hey, I guess you got to come. So I came, and then I was just thinking I would be singing and I wouldn't really say anything and do anything. But Lars like introduced me right away. I was like, hey, Howard, this is Avi. He's like, what are you doing here? You know,
who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, that's pretty close to how the clip you shared. It was like, what is this? Who is this person?
Yeah. I was like, yeah. I'm getting lunch. Yeah, because I think, I mean, it's, you know, I'll just do whatever job for them. So I'm kind of like, I kind of could actually have been getting lunch right after that.
As you said, you're around.
Because I was
Metallica
singing.
Metallica pays you in sandwiches. We get it.
Yes, it's fair. It's more than fair. But yeah, that actually, because that was like peak COVID times. Like we were in like a crazy bubble with like COVID compliant officers and stuff like that. And everyone had to be like masked with shields and stuff. And so because I was going to have my mask off to sing around the band and you know, be in with them, I was told that I couldn't run errands to public places. So I got out of like doing runner stuff for that time and just kind of did stuff there. For that Howard Stern show, which you know, wasn't the end of the world, but so I did not actually get lunch. My buddy Dana, who is a legend, and it's another runner for the band, got lunch that day.
Well, I'm glad. It was so so funny to see that connection being made in that, I don't know, in that, to me, in my mind, like that Howard Stern is like the biggest voice in radio, even though I don't even have serious radio.
King of all media. Yeah.
King of all media.
Yeah.
Calling on our buddy. But yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting stuff. I guess that you know, the reason I thought like, I can't believe I haven't hit Avi up about this is not the Metallica connection. It's the Coors Banquet connection, my man. You have to tell me how you got connected with the Coors family.
You know, I don't even really know. We got an email saying that I think they were going to have a new campaign and there were other bands being pitched to them, but that someone involved either at the ad agency or at Coors and the company had heard our song on Pandora and thought it was perfect and really wanted it. And so they had us pitch for it. And, you know, we made it through the first couple rounds. And then at the end, it was like down to us and one other song. I'm not sure what it was, but they went with it. And we're just like, this is the song. So yeah, it was great and crazy.
What does pitching for that mean to you guys?
We were not really involved in that. We just get the okay to use it. And we had to go get like stems. I mean, the songs like from that record are, you know, we're on hard drives, all the original files. Like we never made stems for those songs, which is like, you know, individual audio tracks of like the drums and the bass track and the vocals and guitars, like all separate. So they can mix up certain things or down for a commercial. And you know, remaster it for the commercial or do whatever they want to do with it. We didn't have those and we had to get them. I had to get our audio engineer to like get out of a session like that night to like meet me at like midnight to make stem, like find the song, find the hard drive. Because I had a copy of you know the version that I gave him, but it didn't have his mix on it. It had like
just
the original
like re-record
tracks.
This whole track.
Oh my god, that would have been a nightmare. So we found it though, and he made stems as close as you know we could get them. Some reverbs were, you know, the reverb in the that he had run something through wasn't like, you know, available to pass it through again, and it wasn't printed as a stem. So we found some similar. Anyway, the whole thing came together at like midnight that night. We sent it in. And the rest is history. But I guess they just, you know, they send them sample commercials, you know, with a sample voiceover and stuff like that, and use the song in it and pitch to them what they think that what they can go achieve. you know.
Is it a Sam Elliott voiceover on this commercial?
It is a Sam Elliott voiceover.
I feel like awesome. Sam Elliott plus Goodnight Texas makes a lot of sense.
That's my God. Yeah. It's a match made. He's not on Twitter, but I would, if he was, I would definitely have tried to tweet at him and be like, it is an honor to be under your voice, sir. But he's not. I would love to have a chance to talk to him.
I mean, nothing feels more Rocky Mountain than that combo.
Oh, that's true. That's true. From
Wild West.
I mean, that's, has that, obviously, yeah, there was, I'm sure, a monetary piece of that, but like, has there been like recognition that comes out of that, or people like, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for a time period there, I mean, we got something crazy, like 1,000 Shazams like a day for like a while there when it was like on peak.
Sure.
You know, we were getting like a lot of like people being like, what the hell's that song? You know? And the other thing is actually for the commercial, they sped it up slightly and we were really concerned that Shazam wouldn't work with it. But once the ad came out, we tried it and it did work. So, but there was like a period where it was like in the NBA finals and like the Stanley Cup and it was like in everything. And we were getting like all ton of people Shazamming us, like 1,000 or 2,000 people a day for like a period there. It did add a lot to that song's reach.
I remember when you played it, we happened to be in Portland, Oregon at the same time. You donned Coors Banquet baseball cap and remarked that you had to pay for that fucking cap.
I got it on eBay. Yeah. I was like, well, you know, they actually did. I'm not gonna throw them under the bus. They sent us some pretty cool swag. But they sent it to a venue we played in Denver, like later that tour.
Gotcha.
They had someone drive like a bunch of backpacks and shirts and stuff like that. So they did hook us up. But once we got the commercial, I like went on eBay. I was like, I need a sick Coors, not like a Coors Light hat or like a Coors hat. I wanted a Coors Banquet hat.
Right.
So I got that one on eBay. But they did give us hats too, actually.
I appreciate that immensely.
Which is not necessarily normal. Like companies don't really do that. You don't get like, you know, a case of beer or anything from, or certainly like backpacks and stuff like from the company. Yeah. So that was pretty nice of them to do that. That's secret shout.
If someone shouts out Jack's Abbey, we give him a case of beer on Instagram. Coors got to start fessing up a little more. Jeez.
Yeah. Of course. Hey, I'm saying Coors is good. It's, you know, with my band in college, we had a song in a Jack Daniels commercial for Tennessee whiskey, Tennessee honey. That's what it was. The honey flavored Jack Daniels whiskey. I was in the commercial for a long time. It was like their main commercial. And, I went to the factory. We didn't get any. I'm not trying to throw them under the bus either.
You can throw them under the bus.
But I went to the factory and we did a tour at the factory. And at the end of the tour, I told the tour guide, I was like, hey, you know, I sang in your commercial for Tennessee Honey, the commercial. And she was like, oh, that's very nice. Cool. All right, well, have a good day. And then showed us out. It's like,
hourly worker that's just touring you around. I don't think it's just like, yeah, like, sure you do.
Give me a high five or a bottle of something. But it is a dry county, so you can't like taste test it at the place there or get, they can't sell it.
True.
Like, another guy claims that he sings that song.
I tell you.
Yeah, and she hears it every day, Javi. Come on now.
Yeah, she probably does hear it every day.
It made me smile to see you guys have that recognition. And I have to say, I hear a lot of, I probably don't hear as much popular music as some people. But when I do hear popular music in the vein that reminds me of stuff that you guys do, and it's like being, I don't know, it's very commercial and everywhere, I wonder why Goodnight Texas isn't in the place of those people and not some of the people that I've heard do those things. So I'm just going to say that as an aside. I'm like, come on now.
I'm honored. Thank you.
These sons and brothers, et cetera, people, they're all.
I think there's room for everybody at some point. We'll get our, maybe it'll be our cover of Wolf and Man.
Maybe it could be. I mean, it's basically
the only one.
Like,
it's the only one in that style. So.
No, but thank you guys. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, I've seen you at shows for, for years. I mean,
oh yeah. I mean, our you know, mutual friend, Mike,
even, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever
you the other day.
Yeah. Well, actually I'm going to see him tomorrow. I'm going to Tennessee tomorrow with him and a couple of our friends. So I'm,
That's awesome. You're doing
taking a long weekend.
Oh, hanging out. That's
eating some hot chicken with my friends.
Yeah. Going to get some honey whiskey.
Sure.
You're going to tell them you sang that song.
You know, that song.
Hey, I sang that song, if you remember.
You know, I sang it. And you watch it, you know, you can take the credit. That's fine. It's been long enough.
Send you all the bottles they give me. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Give but you a vintage hat that you're very jealous of.
Yeah.
Earlier on, we were talking about like what the last year is like for you guys, and you said it was, you know, a little bit more normal for you maybe than others, but you also mentioned having a record ready to go. So like what did you guys get up to in the last year, and
we finished working on parts on the record. We had the record like pretty much done, and then we added some stuff to it. We had more time to think about it because of quarantine, so we kind of added a couple extra songs, wrote a few extra things, and so it ended up being for the better by a long shot. But yeah, we just kind of kept, it was easy to sort of send tracks. We've been using a thing called Audio Movers, and we can like get together on Zoom and have, you know, our pedal steel guy do pedal steel from his house. And we got, you know, we got people set up with some, you know, people got some good enough mics to lay down some tracks at each other's houses and send stuff to each other. And it sounded great. It's been going great. So that was, that was kind of how we did that and kept busy. And you know, we're just like, all right, well, let's save this till we know we're done with it, you know, and hopefully it'll be when we're touring again and doing shows. There's no reason to put it out, you know, right towards the end of quarantine or anything.
Yeah.
Let's wait till we can actually hit the road with it.
I kind of felt like maybe the last full length Conductor was a bit of a, not really a departure, but I feel like you guys may have used like personal pronouns a bit more there than in some other ones. Yeah. It felt like maybe there was, I guess sometimes I feel like you guys are telling stories in occupying characters for the space of a song. And on Conductor, I kind of felt like there were some that maybe were from your as the songwriter's point of view. Do you think that's a valid read of it, or maybe
I think that is true. I think it's like, I think the songs on that were, you know, we're much more personal or introspective, and kind of did maybe resemble some of the things that we, you know, saw and felt, as opposed to being just stories, you know, about history or stories that take place in other characters' minds. But I think that's pretty accurate. And, you know, Pat especially preferred, I think he writes more songs in that vein, and I gave it a try on that record too.
What is it like to occupy a character for writing a song like that, especially when it's something maybe removed by generations?
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like, just kind of believing it a little bit, or like, you know, even if it's fictional, or, just kind of trying to put yourself in the position of someone that may have felt that, and sort of try to feel like how they would have felt. I mean, I think our song Jesse Got Trapped in a Coal Mine, you know, is one that it's like, what would it be like to, you know, lose, you know, a fiance, and just kind of be expecting them to come back in this, hoping that maybe they'll, you know, and just trying to, I think there's been trying to figure out that character and understand what they might be thinking if that were happening has kind of made that song more poignant to play live, and a song that sounds sort of upbeat, be kind of heavy and dark too. I think sometimes, you know, I guess it's maybe a sort of like act, or what I imagine acting is like, not that I know what acting is like, I have no idea how to act, but you know, where you have to kind of get into character a little bit. Like for singing our song Dearest Sarah specifically, that's one where I have to kind of like take a second and like really, if I really want that song to hit, I have to like really feel like I'm saying that to my saying goodbye to my wife, you know, or something. I'll never know what that's like, but I can try to make a best guess and try to, you know, embody that character. I think that makes it sort of feel more personal and makes the words sort of hit people stronger in a live setting or something. I feel like when there are days where I'm not feeling it, I can tell that it doesn't reach people, or days where I'm, you know, the sounds aren't good or something's off or something doesn't quite feel right. You can kind of tell, you feel like you're not quite as focused. And the song won't hit quite as hard, or the story won't.
I was going to shout out Jesse Got Fragged in a Coal Mine as an excellent version.
Sick. Yeah.
the elusive Bad Night Texas.
Yeah, Bad Night Texas. They exist. They're out there. They're just waiting for the next show to blow something up. Yeah.
I did quite enjoy you guys in indulging that. Kind of what we talked about earlier, that like darker, heavier side.
I mean, yeah, you have to explain what Bad Night Texas is if you're going to bring it up.
All right, yeah. So Bad Night Texas is Good Night Texas's evil twin. We cover Good Night Texas.
You put on
songs.
Like fake mustaches, like Community style, like alternate timeline.
Yeah, we should. No,
good idea.
We do wear like, you know, denim and like cut off fucking metal shirts and shit. But we turn our songs into like heavy metal or hard rock stuff and some thrashy stuff. And yeah, we just take our songs and like rethink about them. Like, what if, you know,
what if
Slayer played this, or like, what if Black Sabbath played this?
The record you put out, Patrick isn't on that, right? Like, it's just,
that's correct. Know. Pat's not on it. It's sort of a side project between myself and Scott Patton, who is our drummer now but was our bass player for a long time,
right?
And then playing bass, so he's playing drums in Bad Night, and then on bass is Jonathan Kirchner, who is our first bass player and is good, great friend, and is a mastering engineer who's mastered our last, I don't know, everything since Uncle John Farquhar, including Uncle John Farquhar. But yeah, he's actually the bass player on Long Life of Living.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you guys had a little switch back
and forth. Yeah, he's in his, he has a band of his own that he sort of, you know, heads up. He's not like a front man. He's the bass player, but it's his, you know, his main project, which is Cumbrio. They're an amazing, like, funk soul band.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just
like show-stopping front man.
I have to like figure out how to be in the same place as a Bad Night Texas show someday. But you know,
I know if things get really tight, I think we're going to just take it on the road to see what happens.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, why not?
Well, I'll let you know if I hear something coming up and you're looking for a vacation in San Francisco, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Why not, man? Yeah, we should. We should.
Yeah.
That'll be a good time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of I'm drinking a banquet beer in honor of Sam Elliott and the Goodnight Texas collaboration split spoken word 7-inch commercial that we talked earlier. But I didn't ask you in advance other than to say, like, you know, we're going to drink banquet beer and we're talk about that. But, you know, you guys have traveled the country many times. Do you have a beer story or a beer that brings you to a specific place?
Oh, let's see.
Tell a story about.
You know, yeah. I mean, we like beer as a band. I mean, I think we, you know, our sort of. I mean, we always were just like kind of a PBR backstage band, just because it's easy. But getting Coors Light or Coors Banquet on there is fun if we can. If we're in Colorado, especially, or really,
you know,
anywhere.
I should ask you when the last time you had a PBR was, because we realized on this podcast with a previous guest that none of us had PBR since we've seen live music. We're like,
not
shit.
Since a show,
you know,
not since getting Pounder Canada show.
Yeah, I realize I don't drink PBR unless I'm out at a bar or venue. It's kind of an easy go-to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's I had one at my my fiance's ceramics show was at a bar. It was like, it was in March of this year. It was like pretty early, or pretty like pretty early stages of things beginning to begin to right. open up. And it was at a bar, it was outside on the patio, but like the bar was open. And I like went up to the bar and like ordered a drink. And it was like the first time in a year that I'd done that.
Felt like, oh, like dirty about it.
Yeah. And I was like,
do you have that stuff?
Alcohol. I was like thanking the bartender like profusely. I'm like, thank you for your trouble. I'm sorry. Thanks for being here. But yeah, I got a PBR. And they were like, tall boy or a standard can? And I was like, I guess tall boy.
Fewer trips back.
Yeah.
That's fewer, it.
Less COVID possibilities.
Yeah, the less, so, there's also, less COVID, the larger the can.
Yeah.
Then less.
Yeah. Less possibility. But yeah, it was very crazy. It was very, very crazy. But yeah, I know I haven't had much of that. During quarantine, my fiance Danny and I have been drinking Founders All Day IPA, which we got, which is like super light, but it's got some like flavor to it. And it's it's just like cool. It's just cool. That and Modelo are like our two. We're gonna, you know, drink something at home. But I know we kind of like, I feel like some people like got to quarantine and they're like, you know, let's just have wine at home all the time. And for some reason, I think we sort of like switched into like drinking less. Some people, I don't know, everyone kind of went in their own way during
quarantine. I did not go that way.
Okay. Fair.
Until my wife got pregnant, that helped a little bit, but definitely.
Yeah.
Well, congrats, by the way.
I'm with you, Avi. I did the same thing. Rebecca and I
it was, I don't know, it just felt like bus. It just felt, yeah, it was, I'd kind of be like, yeah, I started like not having it as often, and then I would just like wake up earlier and feel motivated, and it was like, yeah, oh, this is kind of nice. And then yeah, just so, but I mean, we still had some, but you know, those were our go-tos when we had it. And then there's like a white wine that we're into, they were our drinks of choice throughout quarantine.
I just got my had my first hangover in over a year.
Yeah.
And it was not great.
Yeah.
They don't get any better.
Crap. No.
I was like, what is this? Why am I up at this time? What is, I was, oh yeah, I drank too much and haven't done that in over a year.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Practice doesn't make it better.
We had a little get together at a friend's house the other day, and I took an Uber for the first time like in a long time just to go down there, thinking like, oh, I'm not going to drive, I'm going to have a few drinks. Ubers are more expensive than they used to be.
True.
And yeah. I had a few situations where that night where it was like, there are no drivers available. What's that? I guess it's just, you know, demand went way down. So now they're trying to catch up again. But yeah. And then I was like, wow, I had like, might've been 3 beers at the most, maybe 2.5 beers. And I was just like, I need to go to bed. I can't hang anymore. I'm like, God. But fortunately it was like 9:30 and they all were in the same boat. We're all, a couple of them had kids, you know, right before quarantine. So people are, my friends around me are down to call it on the relative early side. And
I was at a bar nice transition after midnight last night.
What?
And I am so fucking tired.
Yeah. I know. I was kind of hoping that shows, like live shows, would maybe like bump a few hours earlier after all this. Like, can we all agree? Like, we want to like, let's start the show at like 8 and like be out of there at like 11. Is that a thing we can do? Like, do we have to have
maybe three band shows could make their roaring comeback.
Yeah.
I think I have tickets to a few 3-band shows, but you know, there's obviously.
Maybe it starts early, maybe it doesn't, you know, maybe, or, you know, just like the headliner starting at 11:30 thing. Like, do we have to do that? Do we still have to do that? We'll see. I might have to do that. I mean, if we're going to do a headlining show, maybe we can pitch it that we go on earlier or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Headline should be at the top.
Headline should be able to decide when they want to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But also then, you know, you get done early and then the bar closes earlier than they're hoping. And then the bartenders make less tips and then you're screwing everybody. So it's like, you know, you gotta think.
Does it though, if you start earlier, people show up earlier?
In theory. Yeah. But you know, they also would keep drinking. the longer you play. So
tough to say. So what you're saying is Bruce Springsteen plays for 3 hours for the bartenders. That is just,
I think Bruce Springsteen, he's down to help the
always looking out for the fucking working man. Well, that guy's a fucking hero.
Yeah, fellow podcaster. We're basically the same.
Yeah. I just started listening to that podcast. It's great.
I haven't gotten to it yet, but I probably
would. I recommend it. It's a good conversation. Yeah. They have a good banter going back and forth. Barack Obama is very funny. He's a funny guy.
Very naturally humorous.
He's got a great sense of humor.
Sure does. How he went through the previous 4 years without just talking absolute shit.
Is good for him. The restraint of a lifetime. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he did it. So.
Yeah, he pulled it off.
Sure did. I was curious. Is good. Do you have a show booked right now?
We do. We're coming. We have a couple shows in July. Three shows in July. So we had two rescheduled shows from 2020 in Wyoming. So they're on July 17th and 24th. And then this year we added Floyd Festival in Virginia, which is directly between them. So we got to go to Wyoming, fly to Virginia, fly back to, we're going to Salt Lake City, fly back to Salt Lake City, go back to Wyoming, play the second Wyoming show, and then go home. So we're doing two shows, a show in Wyoming, a show in Virginia, Floyd Fest, and then back to Wyoming again. So wow, those three are on the books. Other than that, the fall is a little bit of a question mark for us, but there's some stuff in the pipeline.
Cool. That is a very complicated three show run.
Yeah, that's going to be a hell of a week.
Yeah. But, I'm assuming you wouldn't have planned it that way if you had your druthers.
No.
But
I not intentionally, no. I think we tried to see if maybe one of the Wyoming shows was interested in like having us the weekend before or something, but it just wasn't possible to move things. And they had already given us an advance from last year that we were, you know, so we didn't want to screw them over, but
yeah. Well,
yeah.
Good for you guys.
We're going to make it work. We figured it out. It's going to work. Salt Lake City Airport to RDU in Raleigh, Durham, is very doable. And, you know, renting a car on the East Coast, however, is renting a car at all right now is challenging and very, very expensive.
I have heard this, and I'm concerned because I need to do this at some point this fall. Maybe I need to jump on that now. But that is exciting. You said you have a record and you're ready. Imagine you have like a rollout plan ready to.
Oh, it's mastered. So you can't even touch it again.
No,
you can't fiddle around with it anymore.
No,
it's done.
No more fiddling. It's done. It's mastered. The art's done. We had to. I mean, vinyl production is so backed up right now. Like, I bet if you see a band releasing an album, that the vinyl is not going to be ready on the same day that the album comes out. That's just pretty much the way it's going to be this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were hoping to put stuff out in October and maybe in October or something like that. We turned in our vinyl artwork in May, beginning of May, I think. And not going to be ready in October. So we'll see how it goes, but I mean, you know, yeah, it's pretty, if, you know, whether or not we have vinyl, we have the full artwork together, everything's designed, everything's ready to roll on the album. Cause we had to be done very early with it to try to get it out this fall. But yeah.
Well, how do you think it fits sonically and with what you've done up to this point? Are any of the singles that you guys have out right now on it or part of it?
Yeah. Yes. Both of them will be on it.
Cool.
It's an interesting sort of, a combination of kind of agoraphobic sounding stuff and weird tangents, and it's sort of like the inside of a weird mind. But yeah, I think it fits with what we've done. But there's definitely some weird. I mean, like Hypothermic is kind of a crazy song. There's stuff that's heavy and dark like that, and then there's stuff that's, you know, more fun and get to really show off our band members now with pedal steel stuff and fiddle and
cool.
Probably one of the one of the saddest songs that we have, and one of the harshest, like hardest songs to swallow is on this record. I'm excited for people to hear that. It's pretty dark, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff kind of all over the place. And again, it's sort of a scrapbook of American stories, but yeah, using some electric guitars and using some new sounds and different things.
Nice. I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
I'll sneak you a link when I'm allowed to.
Yeah. Appreciate you, man.
Secret links.
Links. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I wanted to liken Goodnight Texas to a beer, and I'm having a hard time. Maybe you can help me fit. I'm usually trying to shove some kind of beer content in here.
You know, I mean, there's not. I mean, Lone Star is
okay.
Is a great Texas standard. Scheinerbach.
Scheinerbach's the better one.
Great. They're both great Texas beers, though. I mean, anywhere you go in Texas, you're going to find, you know, one or both of those. And I think the fact that they're standard and they're affordable and they're good is, we're affordable and standard.
But you have a nice rustic quality that Lone Star does not have, that Scheinerbach at least has a little bit.
That's true. Well, I mean, I would say we're definitely not like, you know, like a Saison.
No, I mean, there is like a farm worker vibe to Saison there that I think you could make like.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
But it does have like a European vibe. And I think you guys, whatever you want to call your music, I think it is American. Like you were in American Stories. Like
yeah. We tell stories of the United States. Yeah. You know, I mean, some of the standard classics, you know, Silver Bullet, Banquet.
You might just be like Anchor Steam, you know, might stick with that San Francisco classic right there.
Anchor Steam is a classic San Francisco beer.
Arguably one of the first indigenous American styles of beer.
It is pure America right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest, you know, still doing the same recipe beers out there.
It's true. And they just kind of like that style that they, you know, kind of invented. They have kept tried and true.
Sierra Nevada is a great California beer that's kind of everywhere. Lagunitas makes amazing stuff.
That's true.
They're kind of all over the map. They make like a hop water that's freaking awesome.
Yeah. I like this. Like a hoppy seltzer.
I don't know. Seltzer water. Yeah. It's good.
We are a pro non-alcoholic seltzer show.
Are you?
That cool. Fits in our
Yeah, they make an NA too. That's really. I have some friends that don't drink that are into the NA they make, and I finally tried it. It's great. It's great.
I've tried it.
Nothing wrong with NAs if that's your bag. Beer is good.
Regardless. I feel like we've had a few of them on the podcast, so you know
that's true. That's very true.
If they're a musician, send them this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been fun. Yeah, we talked to people who are like super into beer and like very into like pairing beer and music, and folks who don't drink beer anymore but were once very associated with it. And,
or one fellow Bay Area musician who didn't like beer but still drank two of them with us. So
that's true. That would be Mike Park of Asian Man Records. That was a funny. He's like, I hate beer.
Okay.
And then he drank two beers with us. Like, okay, well,
that's great. What a guy. It's the influence you guys have. Your positive influence.
Positive peer pressure influence. By the way,
I think. But you know, beer is definitely always. That's been a fun part of our of touring and trying beers in different towns and seeing what's cool everywhere. And you know, you're in. Go to Minneapolis and they have Grain Belt and those, like, you know, those kind of things. Or you're in Colorado and you try like Odell's stuff or, you know, New Belgium stuff or whatever. There's a lot of, you know, local breweries and different things. Anderson Valley in California is awesome.
Oh, sure.
Really good. The Boot stuff.
The Boot, yeah. I have a memory actually of you having a very, very Boston experience when you came and played in Jamaica Plain and we went to the Galway House. Galway House is on Center Street in Jamaica Plain, and it's just a dark, dank bar with little booths in there, and they have a couple craft beers and like decent food. And it's mm-hmm. just like when somebody like comes in from out of town, it's a place where myself and some other people like to take people. It's like, this is like a real towny bar for Boston, not like an
yeah,
Irish bar.
I remember that place. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you remember it. It is not the most memorable, but it is a place that I think I hold near and dear, and I believe has survived in the past year. And it's very important to places like
yeah. What do you think we got there? When you think Boston, obviously it's Sam Adams, or like what, like Narragansett? Is Narragansett from Massachusetts?
Narragansett is from Rhode Island, actually.
From Rhode Island, okay.
Yeah,
I feel like that's always.
They just built a
like
big brewery, and we know the brewer Lee Lord, who's a lovely person. She's the brewer at their new brewery.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, we have like not as many indigenous lager styles that have survived. There were a couple of like classic Boston ones that that did not survive, or like bought by other breweries and then just kind of disappeared. But there's a big beer scene out here now. Like Matt and I are part of it in some capacity, but there are like 200 breweries in Massachusetts, this tiny little state.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's it is crazy, but it's fun. You know, it's cool to give people the opportunity to try new things. We make a lot of like in the Jack's Abbey part of our brewery, like a lot of classic lagers. And Dennis, who's our producer, will have to deal with me saying we will send you some legally. We've gotten in trouble for saying we ship or mail. We're not going to mail it because it's illegal to mail it, but we will make sure some beer arrives to you.
Yeah.
In the near future, but not not by illegally shipping it via the mail.
I mean, it feels appropriate. We'll give it to a hobo, have him ride the rails. That seems like he could tell you a tale and
hobo codes. Hobo codes. Fantastic. Well, I appreciate you spending an hour with us, man. Thank you
for good seeing you. It's been a while.
It's been too long. Micah, I have not told Micah I was going to catch up with you. I'll probably end up just talking about it tomorrow. I thought it would be fun to surprise him, but since I'm going to see him, I feel like, you know.
You gotta say hi. Micah, but for anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Micah is a friend of mine from high school who moved out to Boston to do college and met you in Boston.
Yeah.
And so when I would go out and hang out with Micah or play shows out in Boston, that's how I met you.
That's true. And then we converged in Nebraska for Micah's wedding.
Oh, yeah. Micah got married in Lincoln, Nebraska.
And then I recall the next time you played Boston, you tossed that song out his way. You're like, this is a song for my buddy who got married in Nebraska. Played it. That
song has
always been close to my heart. So I appreciate you.
Now he's in L.A., which is
you can't really write a song about L.A. It's been in Texas. Not as interesting.
Yeah, you got to pick something like, well, we did Barstow. That's kind of that's maybe as close to. There's always stuff down there that, you know, if you do L.A. or Hollywood, that doesn't really work with the Goodnight Texas brand. But you know, maybe like there's some towns in there like Pomona. You could probably
some Minutemen covers and just talk about San Pedro.
Yeah, San Pedro. That's right.
San Pedro's cool. I used to play shows
brand,
San Pedro.
I never got to talk to you about this hat that I'm wearing, which is Goodnight Texas plumbing lesson. Is it plumbing and tennis lessons?
Plumbing and tennis lessons. Yeah.
With a number that you can call.
Yes. And I believe you have, the original hats had the blue ones were not actually our phone number, but that actually is our phone number. You can call
that number.
You can text that number and it will go to my phone. My Google thing, but that is that we got a number in the town of Goodnight, technically.
Fantastic.
Thanks to Google.
Well, pretty amazing. I appreciate you for that. This hat has never quite fit my head, so it is just I have to wear it in special occasions, and this is certainly.
Oh, I know some of them. You know, we made them medium crown, and I think those might be short crown. I think we got a mistake, but I'm not sure. They feel
I
small.
Just have a large head, man.
Oh, you just have a large head.
That's it.
Some of them, but they aren't quite as deep as the blue ones that we had made were a little deeper. And those ones felt shallower to me, but that was on that second round of them. But yeah,
well,
if you want to swap it out, let me know.
This has been some good hat size talks to end the podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Appreciate it. Dennis, you're going to have to just cut all of
it. Come here for all your hat size talk needs.
Leave it in. Hats are important.
Hat sizes are very important.
Yeah.
It's the end of season one for us. This is basically blooper reels. So
sure. All of our hat talk at once.
Yep.
Well, thanks, buddy. Thank you for spending the time. I really appreciate it.
Great seeing you.
I appreciate what you do. I look forward to hearing when you're going to make it out this way. I'll be out your way in the fall sometime. So
okay.
I'll meet you up when we're in San
Francisco. Yeah. Totally.
We'll do that.
Yes.
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 Well, buddy.
All right.
Thanks for coming.
Take care. Nice to meet you.
Take care of your house.
Nice to meet you as well.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll put this door back on.
Put that door back on, man. Yeah. All right.
Let's get off.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
He's in. Bye. Bye-bye.